Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ice-T. I want you to do something for me. Make sure you download and subscribe Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Ioncal. It is official, all right? Stop playing. Download and subscribe Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Ioncal. It's cold. Check.
Just can't get over losing
Static
you.
Static
selector.
So, right. Yeah.
Check
it out. Now I won't turn the other
cheek. H-Studio albums, many collaborations, many mixtapes, and a list of incredible artists under his collaboration belt. There seems to be no stopping the creativity of my next guest. He's about to drop his ninth studio album, The Balancing Act. He's Static Selector, and I want to welcome him to Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Ioncal. Thank you so much for being here, man.
Yeah.
I want to talk about your debut album with Spell My Name Right, and you had DJ Khaled on do a Make a Movie interlude, and he talked about the idea of breaking records and how DJs don't do that anymore. So I want to ask you, like, what was that for you in hindsight? Like, what was that record that you think you took a real chance on, you broke, that in hindsight was you did take a big chance on, but also kind of helped change the trajectory of your career?
I don't know if it was one particular song, but definitely artists that I've broken that, you know, ended up being the foundation for my career, really, like from the Terms to the Action Bronsons to the Mac Millers to the Gibbs to the Joeys, like a lot of artists that I was there before anyone else, like first one to bring them on the radio, all that. So that's definitely part of the foundation.
All right, nice. I feel like it's so tough not to get caught up in, and going with what's popular, I guess, at the time, you know, whatever's on commercial radio, especially since you have a radio background. What would you initially look for in an artist that kind of, you know, knew that this was a good time to you could break them in, or you could take that chance with them?
Just the qualities that I grew up, you know, being a fan of, the Nas's and the Jay's and the Biggs, like all the artists I work with have something unique about them. And I just think I have the ear for that. Like, I'm not looking for the next, you know, 15 minutes of fame rapper. I'm looking for someone that's going to have a longevity in a career and really have a mainstay power.
Nice. On the debut album, on the No Mistakes Allowed track, you have a slew of DJs, you know, Dougie Fresh, Tony Touch, Scram Jones, and so many others. For you, what was the, I really appreciate that, because there's this importance, obviously, to represent the beatbox and the art of the DJ. Kind of what, for you, what's the importance of those two, those art forms?
I mean, the DJ is hip hop. So, you know, through the years, the roles have changed and everything and the way people look at things, but it's always important to hold the DJ first, and you know, I'll always represent that.
On the track Hardcore, which features Rex and Terminology, Rex, I think Terminology is something where he goes, "We owe it to Big, we owe it to Pac, we owe it to Proof." With those lyrics, you kind of know how those artists have impacted Terminology. But for you, how did those three artists kind of impact you?
I mean, that's all I listened to growing up, was Biggie and Pac, and then, you know, rest in peace, Proof. I had a couple experiences with him personally, and he had a great energy, man. He was really like the poster child for Detroit and that whole scene, and just what he did with M and all that. But Proof was an ill dude, man. He brightened up the room when he walked in.
Dead another casualty, or I could go to the pen, but I'd rather be free. So I will always be the person that I become until my knowledge is instilled into everyone. I ain't done.
So you wanna be hardcore?
You know, you obviously worked with other you know, greats, and you've worked with the late Mac Miller and Sean Price. When did you first hear them, and what really stood out to you as they were doing?
I mean, I heard Helter Skelter the first time when they dropped La Fleur, La Fleur, Scotia. And then, you know, I was always a Boot Camp Click fan from the beginning. Mac Miller, the first time I heard him was Kool-Aid and Frozen Pizza. And I reached out to my man Artie, who was one of the owners of Rostrum Records. And I remember I was like, yo, I don't want what happened with Wiz to happen again, because I kind of fronted on Wiz at first. And, you know, I was keeping it a buck. Like, I wasn't really feeling him at first. And then he kind of found his sound and found his way. And, you know, I kind of regretted. I had a couple opportunities to work with him really early that I passed on. And I told him I wasn't going to do the same thing with Mac. So, you know, Mac came up. You know, Mac had never even been in New York before. He came up. It was the day before his 18th birthday. Came up to my radio show, and the next day he drove back to Pittsburgh and then drove back again to come to the studio. So Mac was on his shit.
That's like a 6-hour drive or more. Yeah, I think for me the most incredible thing, I mean, obviously Mac Miller being an incredible artist, but what was also incredible is that when he did pass, the amount of people, not just from like the quote-unquote commercial world, but from like the underground world, that just like talked about how much he impacted them. You know, your production has always stands out with all your albums, and there's this on this the track Carry On, which features Joey Badass and Freddie Gibbs, off What Goes Around, there's these horns throughout the entire track. How what was the thinking process going into using these horns, and then how did you know that these two artists would be perfect for this track?
It was actually just like a quick beat I put together, and one night we were at Joey Badass's old crib in Bed-Stuy, and we were in the basement. He was just like freestyling on songs, and he kind of just like freestyled that verse, and I really liked the way it came out. So I was like, yo, I'm gonna send it to Gibbs, and just the song came together. But at first, there was no direction for it at first.
Is that for you? I mean, when you are working with an artist, and I mean, are you creating the beats first, or are you waiting for the artist to kind of agree to be on the track before you create anything?
Nah, I just sit there and make beats, man. Like, it's not no intricate process. And I just sit there and try to knock out as many as I can when I'm in the studio, because especially nowadays, I'm not in the studio as much as I used to be.
Right. Yeah, and you mentioned, I mean, you're not just, you know, creating albums and producing albums. You also, you have a radio background in terrestrial radio, but you also have a, you know, you're on Shade 45, Sirius XM. I know this is a discussion a lot that people talk about, the advantage of Sirius radio, or, you know, satellite radio versus terrestrial radio. But what are you kind of finding that is kind of the key advantages of being on satellite radio that you could not get anywhere in terrestrial radio?
I mean, it's a luxury to be able to play 30 versions and to be able to say whatever you want. That's different. And then, you know, I don't have no playlist. I don't have the program director Ron Mills is dope, man. He lets everybody do what they do. That's why we're on them in the first place, is because every DJ on the station has their own brand. So it's like they trust us to do what we do, and there's no rules. Terrestrial radio is like, especially now, it's worse than ever. But I was always kind of lucky when I was on FM radio too, though, because the program directors never really bugged out too bad on me. Like, they let me do what I wanted. I knew the rules. Usually you got to play like a record off a list, and then you can play, you know, you can play two songs in rotation and then play a record that you pick. There's different rules to different stations.
Right.
But Sirius, we have none of those rules.
Do you see at all? I mean, I don't know if you're still in touch with the terrestrial radio world, but do you see any at all, like maybe program directors kind of backing you off a little bit on DJs and kind of control what they do?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Cool. I was listening to this interview you did, and you talked about having Jay-Z's and Nas's Black Republican, the record, like 6 months prior to it dropped. And I don't want to ask you about the story about how when it leaked and stuff like that, but what I thought was interesting is that you talked about how you were able to use it as leverage to get other exclusives from labels. And I was just curious, how does that work exactly? Like, what does that mean that like you have a record early? So why would a record label, I think, be more inclined to give you more exclusives early?
Because it was a different era back then, and mixtapes were everything. Like the streets, if people were going crazy over a song on a mixtape, then it was a good look for the album, and it was, you know, foreshadowing the album. So when a situation like that, it's like having a Jay-Z Nas record, I was going on the labels, and like artists were even doing exclusives for the tape because they knew how many people were going to be listening to that tape because it's not exclusive. So like they give us the whole Clips album. We got all kinds of shit for that. And I think every song on the mixtape was exclusive, actually. So we killed it with that one. Me and Big Mike.
What was like kind of the highlight of creating this? I mean, you know, the big thing was the Nas mixtape. For you, what was the big highlight off of that?
Which one? The Prophecy one?
Yeah. Sorry.
I mean, it was just a crazy story how it happened, because I went from getting calls telling me that Nas wasn't happy with me because I put, you know, because of that tape. And then when I finally got on the phone with his manager, who's actually my manager now, which is funny, Mike Brinkley, shout out to Mike. When I got on the phone with him, I was expecting to get, you know, cursed out. But instead, he was like, yo, Nas wants you to do his actual mixtape now. So it really worked out for me in a bunch of ways.
Was that, I mean, for you, was that the... It seems like you're really taking kind of a with a mixtape like that. I mean, if Nas is really mad at you, then that could, like, I would imagine make or break your career type stuff. Was that kind of your?
I mean, that's part of the history, though. Like, you know, Biggie had a hit out on Who Kid, like Clue. All these guys have crazy stories. I heard that Big Pun like kidnapped Who Kid one time. Like, it's all part of the mixtape game, you know?
Right, got you. You know, obviously, we're talking in the middle of, you know, whatever month we are in this, you know, 2020 pandemic. And I appreciate that on IG, you reached out to people to share their inspirational stories of getting through this year. Why did you want to hear those stories? But also, what have been kind of the most inspirational stories so far?
I mean, it's therapeutic for everybody. It's good to hear, you know, everybody thinks they got it the worst and they're so bad off. But then you hear about one of the kids that sent me a story. He has, I believe, multiple sclerosis, and he can't walk. He can't talk right. Like, and he sent a story about how he's been going to the gym and he was lazy in the beginning of 2020. He realized he had to focus and all this. And this is a kid that wasn't even supposed to get to this age. And, you know, people are here complaining because they can't buy a new Gucci belt. It's like, it's crazy. So, you know, it's always good to hear someone else's motivation.
That's dope. You know, we talk about, you know, I think you talk about hip hop, you talk about maturity and people, you know, obviously growing up and becoming adults. And then we turn to your new album, The Balancing Act, and you look at the cover art, which is a pretty incredible thing. It's you holding your daughter, but it's also, you have a piece of vinyl on the other hand, you're wearing headphones, so trying to obviously show us the balancing act of what you do with family and your work. What for you, I mean, I think I said it with the question, but what does the art cover art mean to you, and how does this kind of support the overall concept with the album?
I mean, it's just what you said. It's balancing being a dad, being at this point in time, you know, I'm homeschooled her on 3 days a week. Like, and being a single dad is new to me too. So it's a real crazy process. And, you know, when I'm with her, I have her half the week. And when I'm with her, it's like, that's it. I don't really do no music stuff when I'm with her. So, well, she loves going to the studio and she's on the album. She had a blast making it. But, like, for the most part, I stay at, you know, away from the music side of things when I'm with her. So half the week, it's all madness, you know, the partying and the music and all everything that comes with that. And then the other half of the week, I'm going to bed at 9 p.m.
Nice. I'm also home with two kids and doing the remote learning thing for you as well. Just real quick, what has been the toughest part about remote learning?
Dealing with the other parents, man. There's some really bad people out there. Like, the background, like, during the classes, like, some of the stuff that we hear, and, like, people are just really, like, I don't know, man.
Right.
Like I said, people are going through it, and I get that, but, you know, to be so selfish and ignorant towards other kids is crazy. Just the shit I hear daily is just insane. I don't even want to have her in school no more. I might pull her out. It's only kindergarten, and it's like, kindergarten is not mandatory anyway, so we could start fresh next year. But right now, I'm losing my mind doing that shit.
Agreed. You know, I mentioned the on the cover, there's a piece of vinyl in your hand. You know, what is your go-to vinyl? I mean, not when you're creating a record, but kind of like, you know, to whatever, just to, like, you need to listen to something. What are you going to?
Usually jazz records, maybe some like Roy Ayers or like Ahmad Jamal. Like, I listen to a lot of jazz.
The list of artists on The Balancing Act is, you know, is impeccable. You have, you know, Black Thought, Nas, Joey Badass, Killer Mike, 2 Chainz, Conway, Method, Styles P, Jada, Benny, you know, Terminology, and so many more. Has there ever been a time where a collaboration has never worked? Not because, you know, just two people being hard-headed or, you know, but more like there's a certain beat you want the artist to work on or be perfect on, and it's just not working for him or her, and you just it just doesn't work?
Not really. I usually come to an agreement. Like, we come to an agreement on what song it's going to be. And not really. Like, there was a, on this album, the only thing that didn't really work out, and I had YG and Cordae did a song, and he sent me a voice note of him rapping it, and he never got to, like, record it in time, so it didn't make the album. But That's the only situation that really, that something like that happened. It always goes pretty smooth.
You know, I mentioned terminology, and I reached out to Term to kind of say, hey, I'm interviewing Static. Do you have any questions you would ask him? And he came up with a couple of questions, and one of them is, what is your favorite beat that you've ever created? And then the other one is, what's your favorite terminology collaboration you've ever done?
I mean, it's hard to say what beat. I like Legendary a lot. Joey Badass featuring J. Cole. I love the Nas record, Lost Freestyle. My favorite joint I've done with Term is probably there's this record called First Love we got where I'm talking about my daughter, he's talking about his kids, and it's a special record to me.
So, I mean, Term is, you know, he's been on the podcast, and he's obviously an incredible artist. How do you, and you guys have worked together for so long, how do you think you continue? Why do you think the working relationship is so great in terms of the artistic relationship, but also how do you guys keep kind of pushing each other to just do kind of better, do great things?
It was always like a friendly competition, really, because we're both from the same place, and we were born in the same hospital in the same year. Like, we didn't meet till we were 16 years old, but it was always just kind of a competition. And, you know, to push each other and see what we could do. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, there's nobody else that has really been running next to me the whole time like that. Like, even my best friends, like, gave up a while ago. Like, I had a couple kids I grew up with that put out an album, and then they kind of just fell back to do the dad life and all that. And that's cool, but I'm not done. You know what I mean? I still got a lot more shit to do.
Nice. Black Thought is on the first record of the album called The Healing. Why is Black Thought the quote unquote table setter for this album?
I mean, I've been very blessed through the years to get some of his best verses ever. And with this album, it's like, it just felt right. The way he sets it off is very, you know, it's the temperature that's out there right now and what he's talking about. And just a very relevant verse that he did. And he, you know, it's much more than just saying a verse. It's like, I think it's like 32 bars, but he went in. Obviously, he always does, but he got some real dope quotables on this show. I was just like, you know what, I got to stop. We actually got in an argument about it, and at the end of the day, he let me use it. But he wanted, well, me and him are doing a project, and he wanted to use it on there.
What's the, is there a project that you guys have already started, or just more in the, more talking about? I guess more in the works.
He picked out about 6 beats so far. I don't know what he hasn't recorded.
You know, I mentioned that Black Thought is on The Healing, which is the table setter for the album, but the first track that has been released to the public, the single, is Keep It Moving with Nas, Joey Badass, and Gary Clark Jr. So why kind of this track, why is this track the single for the album?
It was just full circle for me, like, to connect Joey and Nas, 2 different generations, and, you know, I signed to Nas for this album. It's on Mass Appeal. I just felt it was bringing the best of both worlds together. And obviously Joey's been on all my albums since I met him. It was just important to me to do that and hold down. People have been talking about hearing Joey and Nas together for so long, and it never happened.
All right.
So we actually met up. We met in L.A. We had like a dinner, and, you know, we talked about the record. This is back in January. It didn't get done till September because of everything that happened this year. So I had to lead the album off with that record though, because, you know, it was just people kind of seen it coming, like, because the press release from when I signed the Mass Appeal was a picture of me, Joey, and Nas.
Right.
It was just important to me for that to be the first song.
That's dope. You mentioned the delay of you know, between Nas and Joey meeting and actually getting the track done, and I think it kind of works. You think about 2020 being a year that people just would want to forget, and just hopefully 2021 would be better. And then you have a track called America Is Canceled, which features Terminology, Styles P, and Jadakiss. Can you just talk about what this track means and what is it referencing in terms of America Is Canceled?
Well, I mean, we're in like a cancel culture right now, And everybody, you walk the wrong way on the sidewalk, America cancels you. And Tom was just basically saying, like, now the whole country's canceled, how trash people have been behaving and voting and all this shit. And, you know, the song has some touchy subjects on it. I can't wait for people to hear that. Term saying some crazy shit on there, and Jada Griffin Styles bodied it. You know, it's like the world, America, like, played itself, man. Like, the way, it's just a very selfish nation, man. And now it's like the rest of the world sees that. And it just kind of flipped on us. Like, at one point, we were looked at the most as, like, the most progressive nation, and, like, you know, it's the center of a lot of the world's culture and shit. And then now it's like people are just laughing at us. So America's canceled.
Are you seeing that more? I mean, in terms of hip hop artists speaking out, kind of about this canceled. I mean, you know, do you see more American artists being more vocal about what's going on around them than what they used to do?
Yeah, I mean, hip hop grew up, and it's like, it's about time. It's like, the shit that we used to like hearing about and making music about is not that fun anymore. Like, you can't sell drugs and shoot people for your whole life, man. You gotta, like, start addressing the problems. And, like, you know, even the most gangster rappers in the world have more, like, enlightened music now.
Right, that's true. The final track of the album is Immortal, which features Harley Harl and Bobby Sessions. What can you tell us about this album, this track, and also why is this the final track of the album?
Well, the reason it says featuring Harley Hall, she only says one word of the song, but after the song ends, 5 seconds later, she got her own secret song, so that's why I put that on there. But yeah, and that's my dog. Bobby Sessions did it, man. Probably, like, that song's like 2 years old now. I've been sitting on it, and one night when I was finishing the album, I just came across it, and I was like, nah, this is the perfect way to end the album, because the song right before it, it's called Way Up, and it's about Mac Miller and Sean Price and Prodigy and Pimp C and, like, everybody we lost. So I thought it was cool to end the album on Immortal, like, basically saying, like, that they live on forever, you know?
Mm-hmm, that's dope. So looking back at the project, kind of what was your favorite aspect of creating this album?
I feel like more accomplished finishing this album than any other album because of just what's going on in the world. And, like, getting it done was just, at times, very nerve-wracking. Like, the quarantine and everything going on in the world just made everything harder to get done. But at the end of the day, there's some silver linings in there because certain songs in the album wouldn't even happen if we weren't going through this. And there's certain moments on the album that really timestamp this moment in time. And hopefully people look back on it and it brings them, you know, it brings them the right memories. I don't know. The song with Jack Harlow, he talks about everything going on right now and what he wishes he could do this year and how the pandemic stopped him. And like, he tells a story on it that really hit me a certain way when I heard it about when Mac Miller died. So it's just like, there's a lot of moments on there that wouldn't be happening if it wasn't for, you know, COVID shit.
Do you give the artist a kind of a concept or direction of where you want to go with the album, or do you kind of just let them do what they do?
Sometimes, with that track particularly, no. I had sent him a couple of beats, and he wasn't really feeling the first couple, and then the one he picked, he was like, yeah, I'm going to use this, and then like a month or two went by, and I was like, bro, you still going to get on it? And he's like, I'm gonna. I was like, all right, and I wasn't sure if he was gonna, and then when he sent me the record, I was just like, wow, like he put a lot more thought and effort into the record than I thought he was gonna, and I was really impressed by that.
That's dope. New album's coming out, The Balancing Act, Static Selector. It's an honor to have you on the Live Air Rap, the Hip Hop Interviews with Tim Monaco. I really appreciate you doing this. Thank you so much.
Well, good, no, peace. Don't nobody move and don't nobody make a sound. Everybody losing.